WABC New York and 107.1 WLIR Hampton Bays.
It's the 77 WABC News Hour.
Talking the news with Noam Layden.
All the news you need to know with Joe Nolan, Traffic, Justin Ellick, Sports, and now.
Talking the news with Noam
on 77 WABC.
Yes, that's me, 5 o'clock. Good morning. It is Monday, April 1st. Already April. Geez, your forecast from the Ramsey Mazda Weather Center. Showers this morning, clouds this afternoon, high 54. Tonight, overnight, cloudy, pop-up showers, low 47, and then Tuesday, more rain, high 49. If you're walking out the door with us right now, it is 44 and cloudy in Nanuet up in Rockland County, 48 and cloudy in Cranford down in New Jersey, and it is 47 and partly cloudy here in Midtown. A whole lot to get to as we work our way up to the 6 o'clock hour. Sid and friends in the morning, of course, yesterday, beautiful day for Easter. You had Timothy Cardinal Dolan, he presiding over services at St. Patrick's Cathedral for Easter in Midtown, welcomed many parishioners, visitors from all over the world who want to get a chance to get into St. Patrick's, especially on a special day like Easter. Hundreds of people filling the pews at churches across the tri-state. In fact, at St. Agnes Cathedral, and we heard this from a number of churches across the tri-state, they said they saw the largest numbers they've seen for Easter Mass in years. And that was true at St. Agnes Cathedral in Rockville Center in celebration of Easter.
Easter is a time of reflection and remembering what Easter really is. It's about Jesus rising.
We're new to the area. They were baptized here at 2 months. And, you know, we try to bring them as often as we can. And so it's really exciting to be here on the holiest day.
So sort of interesting that the numbers were so large. Why this year as opposed to last year or a couple years ago? Maybe some of it is coming out of the pandemic, but we were kind of out of the pandemic last Easter.
It could be so hard at times, but today's a day of hope. They want this. They want to be here. They want the message of hope.
Maybe it's just all the violence recently. Of course, the shooting death of Officer Diller. It's been just a violent time in the city. We're going to get into that as the morning wears on. So that might be what attracted people to services or just the holiday itself. Of course, then you had the Easter Bonnet Parade. It was a beautiful day for that as well. There were thousands of people on Fifth Avenue. They shut it down from 49th to East 57th Street. People just spend some cases like all year getting ready for the Easter Bonnet Parade, and there was some great ones out there.
I love the creativity. I love New York City. This is what we live for.
Yep.
It's a yearly tradition. We got to come correct.
Yeah, the tradition dates back actually to the 1870s, started as a strolling display from people wearing their finery outside churches. Now it's become this sort of over-the-top celebration. There was this one girl with her dad, she must have been about 12 years old. She said, when Easter's over, we start working on our bonnets for the following year. So this year, she had a large, gigantic pizza slice on top of her bonnet. And her dad, on his bonnet, had a napkin dispenser and a jar of, like, cheese. So it made it look like a pizza parlor. It was pretty original.
There are so many people from every nation. It's beautiful.
After last year, we left the parade. We already were starting thinking of our next idea. So it took about, I have to say, 5 to 6 months to actually get an idea on the table.
Yeah, people go crazy for this, and it was a lot of fun to watch. The Easter was not so great at Our Lady of the Rosary of Pompeii, which is this old church in Bushwick, Brooklyn. So they're having services, Easter services yesterday. This is in the early afternoon, about 1 o'clock. And all of a sudden, somebody runs into the chapel to tell them that the church is on fire. The great part is they were able to get all 200 parishioners who were inside, outside of this church. So there were some minor, very minor injuries on the part of some firefighters and some people in the church. But they say everybody's okay, as this May Day call was made during the church service.
He didn't realize that the May Day was for him.
What happened was during this fire, they lost track of one of New York's finest inside this church. And so the firefighters sounded this May Day call. And the firefighter who was inside heard the May Day call and thought it was for someone else, not realize they were looking for him. He was okay, and he was able to get himself out of the building okay to tell everybody there that no problem.
He didn't realize that the May Day was for him, so he bounced up off the floor, came in, and wanted to run back up the stairs to address the May Day issue, but not realizing that the May Day was himself. He was unhurt, thank God, and he was able to continue to fight the fire.
Yeah, so this was a pretty stubborn fire. So now you have all these churchgoers who are dressed in their finest outside for what was supposed to be Easter service, and they're watching their church on fire. It blew through the rectory and the Sunday school, but they were able to douse it before it got to the chapel itself.
When a church is around for a long time, the history that develops among people individually, so this is hurting everybody that is worships here.
Yeah, so there were two firefighters who went to the hospital for minor injuries. Thank God they are okay and already back home.
Keep the door closed because that contains the fire, and thankfully we were able to save the church part of the structure. Has some water damage, but is undamaged overall, and I think that's God looking down on us today on Easter Sunday and saving at least that part of the building.
Yeah, that's what firefighters say, is the person who found the fire in the rectory Sunday school part of the building made the brightest move they could have. They shut the door between the rectory, the Sunday school, and the chapel, and they say no doubt that's what saved the building. And so they're going to have a mess to clean up today, but the chapel is still intact. So that's the good news, and the injuries all there were minor. WABC News Time 507. Boy, those Mets fans. So the Mets season opened up over the weekend. Same for the Yankees. The Yankees are 4-0. The Mets are 0-3. And when you spoke to Met fans on Friday, which was opening day against the Brewers, they were thinking, maybe this is our year. I mean, they're not really, they thought, okay, maybe there'll be a postseason.
Honestly, I don't think we're going to win, but you know, I'm hopeful.
I believe in his plan. Do I think it's going to happen this year, next year? I don't know. I'll always have faith. You got to believe.
I believe in him. He said within 5 years, we're going to win a World Series, and I believe in him.
The he they're talking about is the owner of the Mets, Steve Cohen, who apparently has this 5-year plan to make it to the World Series. But they did not start off well, losing the series to the Brewers over the weekend.
Well, he was off from school today, and we're diehard Mets fans, and believe it or not, my wife surprised the both of us and said, you know what, it's opening day, and you know what, why not start a tradition with Anthony and bringing him to opening day? So it worked out.
Yeah, it's still a good day at the ballpark, just not if you're a diehard fan. It was not a whole lot
of fun.
It could
be a holiday, in my eyes.
This is my Christmas.
Passion. It's like it's like a holiday. You got to come for opening day. Everybody's here, seeing the players, seeing, you know, fans. It's just, it's a great environment. It's a great way to kick off the season.
Much better for the Yankees, who started the season 4-game sweep of the Astros. Juan Soto, who is the newest Yank, had this 9th-inning single that stood as the winning run in their 4-3 win over Houston at Minute Maid Park, and he's pretty excited to be in pinstripe.
I mean, that's what we play for. I mean, we all know there's going to be times that we do fail, and sometimes you're going to have success, but I always want to be up there. I don't mind to be up there and get all the boos or all the claps. Yeah. I'm always ready for it.
He says he likes to be in the moment, the guy who is the playmaker, the one who can win it for the team.
I mean, I just try to do my job. I'm stepping into the play. I'm looking at the situation and see what I can do and how I can help my team the most. You know, that's what my mindset is. It is when I get on the play.
Yeah, so much better for the Yankees, 4-0. The Mets are 0-3. It was a tough weekend out on Long Island in Massapequa Park. Thousands of police officers, friends, family gathering on Long Island to remember Officer Jonathan Diller on Saturday, 5 days after he was fatally shot in the line of duty in Queens. Dozens of NYPD officers on foot and driving motorcycles escorted his coffin to the church. The solemn cry of bagpipes and drums hailed Diller's arrival at St. Rose of Lima Roman Catholic Church in Massapequa Park. His wife, Stephanie, giving the eulogy.
He wasn't the type to sugarcoat anything, so I won't sugarcoat this. This is devastating.
Yeah, so he'd only been on the job as an NYPD cop for 3 years, just 31 years old. Mayor Adams was given a chance to speak during the service.
And I hear over and over in my ears, I've been shot, I've been shot, I've been shot. And even with the acknowledgement that he was shot, he fought and took the gun out of the hand of the person who would take his life.
Police Commissioner Eddie Caban announcing that Diller was promoted posthumously to Detective First Grade. His new shield number is 110, which is his son's birthday, his son just 9 months old.
He was special. He left a lasting impression. And after you met him, everything was different. Everything was better.
The services Saturday followed 2 days of wakes that drew thousands of visitors, including former President Donald Trump and Governor Hochul. We'll get into that story in just a moment. During the wakes, there was emotional, tearful hugs from co-workers of Diller's wife as they rallied around her. She gave about a 9-minute eulogy. Part of that eulogy, she called on the state to do a better job of protecting its residents when it comes to bail reform, and that maybe her husband would still be alive today.
I will never forget the look on his face when our son was born. I don't think we could ever achieve a greater happiness. It's hard to imagine how long I have to wait to see Jonathan again. When the doors to heaven open for me one day, I hope to see Jonathan standing there looking at me just like he did on our wedding day.
So Sid Rosenberg was in the church on Saturday morning, and no doubt he'll have more to say about this service coming up at 6 o'clock. The big story and the sideline story, we don't want to overshadow, of course, what took place on Long Island, but it was part of what happened there. Governor Hochul says that she did the right thing paying her respects at the wake of Jonathan Diller on Friday. She insists that the Diller family did not ask her to leave, as was reported in the New York Post. The governor does say she was confronted by an angry mourner on the way out of the funeral home in Massapequa. The Post reports that mourner told Hochul that she had Diller's blood on her hands. The NYPD, of course, saying Officer Diller killed in the line of duty Monday by a career criminal, this creep, this murderer, 34-year-old Guy Rivera, who had 21 priors. So that's what the mourner and so many New Yorkers are upset about. Why was this guy with 21 priors, two stints behind bars, one of them for assault, back out on the streets to kill this police officer? And what Diller's wife said during the eulogy was the same thing. She's asking the same question, which is a great question. And maybe lawmakers will watch this. If there's anything good that comes out of this officer's funeral on Saturday morning in Massapequa, is maybe lawmakers in Albany will see what's going on. There's this demand and call. And you'll hear later this morning, because it was a really violent weekend in the city. You have New Yorkers on the streets where this 2-year-old was shot over the weekend. Both New Yorkers that had microphones put in front of them over the weekend, just average people on the streets in the Bronx, said the exact same thing. They said this guy who shot, in this case a 2-year-old in the Bronx over the weekend, was somebody who should have never been back out on the streets. It was a guy who had had a charge against him for gun violence in the past. And so maybe, just maybe, this will be the impetus to change things up in Albany. We can only hope. All right, 5:15. Let's head over to the 77 WABC Sports Desk. Happy Monday. Good morning, Justin Allen.
Happy Monday. Good morning to you, Noam Eladen, starting with the completion of opening weekend on the diamond for Major League Baseball out in Houston. Juan Soto had 3 hits, capped by an RBI single with 2 outs in the 9th inning that lifted the Yankees to a 4-3 win that completed an opening 4-game sweep of the arch-rival Houston Astros. Soto hit 529, 9 for 17 with 4 RBI in his first games with the Yankees after his trade from San Diego, helping New York to its first 4-0 start since 2003 and just its 4th since 1950. Nick Birdie got the last 2 outs of the 8th for his first big league win since April 2019. Yanks relievers as a whole pitched 15 and a third scoreless innings in the series. They'll try and take the momentum with them to Arizona next, where they'll get the defending NL champ Diamondbacks for a 3-game set starting tonight. First pitch scheduled for 9:40 p.m. Youngster Luis Gil gets the nod on the bump for the Yankees in Queens. The Mets are singing a completely different tune to start their season, still winless after yesterday's 4-1 loss to the Milwaukee Brewers. It is the first 0-3 start for the Mets since 2014. We'll try and get off the schneid when they open a fresh 3-game set tonight at home against the Detroit Tigers. First pitch set for 7:10 p.m. there, with lefty Sean Manea geared up to make his first start in orange.
Maybe
blue.
This is a good sign, right? Because usually they win on opening day and then they have a terrible season. Maybe this year they lose on opening season and they have an okay season.
I guess that's one way of looking at it.
Right. If you're a diehard Mets fan, it's the only thing you can think of.
Yeah, I guess if you're delusional, you right. can look at it that way. Over to the collegiate hardwood here at Nome, where the Final Four is officially set after this weekend's electric Elite Eight action in the NCAA Men's Basketball Tournament. On Saturday, one seed UConn advanced past 3-seed Illinois before 4-seed Alabama eliminated 6-seed Clemson. Yesterday, 1-seed Purdue took down 2-seed Tennessee before 11-seed Cinderella NC State upset 4-seed Duke to punch their ticket to the program's first Final Four since its 1983 national title. On the NBA hardwood at the Garden, the Knicks fell in last-second heartbreaker, 113-112, to the Oklahoma City Thunder following OKC's snatch of the lead with 2.6 seconds remaining. Jalen Brunson scored 30 points but missed the potential winning jumper in another tough loss for the Knicks, who fell in overtime Friday in San Antonio. Deuce McBride added 19. Dante DiVincenzo scored 15. Isaiah Hartenstein had 17 and 12 rebounds for the Knicks, while Josh Hart added 13 points and 15 rebounds. New York remained without Julius Randle with that shoulder, OG Anunoby with the right elbow injury, and Mitchell Robinson with his sprained left ankle. Out in Brooklyn, the Nets lost 116-104 to the visiting Los Angeles Lakers thanks to a 40-point night out of LA's LeBron James. Cam Thomas led the Nets with 30 points, trying to rally them after a dismal 0-for-8 start from the field to begin the contest. Looking ahead to local action in the NHL tonight. All local teams were absent yesterday. The Rangers will welcome in the Pittsburgh Penguins for a 7 p.m. puck drop, while the Islanders simultaneously pay the Flyers a visit in Philadelphia. That's your sports gnome. And I'm Justin Ellick on 77 WABC.
WABC News Time 519. Let's go down to Baltimore, where the cleanup has not begun on the Francis Scott Key Bridge. They're still trying to figure out exactly how to pull this bridge apart. Maryland Governor Wes Moore telling people in no uncertain terms to keep drones away. That's been an issue over the last week since that bridge was hit by the container ship early Tuesday morning, came tumbling down into the river below. People have been putting up these amateurs, these drones, wanting to get shots of it all.
This is a no drone zone, and that is throughout the entire airspace surrounding the collapse. This is not a game, and please do not test my seriousness on this. All drones are to stay away from the site of the Francis Scott Key Bridge collapse, period, and full stop.
Yeah, that's a pretty serious warning there from the governor. Removing the wreckage of the collapse Francis Scott Key Bridge is going to be apparently very complex. Well, it looks like it would be.
The complicated nature of this is, you know, we have a ship that is nearly the size of the Eiffel Tower that is now stuck within the channel that has the Key Bridge sitting on top of it. And so this is going to be a long road.
Yeah, and so, of course, the issue is so many of them, but one of them is an economic one. Baltimore taking this hit. You have 15,000 people who are dock workers there. What's going to happen to them? There's nothing coming in and out, which is bad just for the entire East Coast.
Maryland needs no favors. We need to make sure that we're actually moving quickly to get the American economy going again, because the Port of Baltimore is instrumental in our larger economic growth.
Yeah, and you had Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg saying that the federal government will do everything it can to help out.
We haven't received a timeline yet, but what I can tell you is the work is now underway. Parts of the non-federal channel are already being worked on, and there is a 1,000-ton capacity lift crane on a barge being put into place now. There's another 600-ton crane on its way to back it up.
And the Department of Transportation has already dished out about $60 million in emergency funds to help clean up the disaster.
Well, I certainly have new perspective on just how demanding that job is. Watching President Biden deal with so many concerns, challenges, and opportunities for this country. And I'm proud to be a small part of the big team that helps him get that done. I sincerely don't know whether I will run for elected office of any kind again.
Oh, okay. I guess they asked him if he was going to run for president. Meanwhile, less visible have been these 22 crew members that are on this container ship. They're still on it. They haven't been able to offload them. Now, of course, they were headed out to sea and would have been on this container ship for a period of time, but we don't know a whole lot about them. They're from India, and reporters who've reached out to them have not heard much back from them. The ship was carrying 4,700 shipping containers when it lost power, sent out that May Day message, Maryland authorities saying that they did the right thing or did the smart thing by sounding the May Day alarm so that they were able, police officers, to stop people from going onto the bridge, and more lives were could have been lost. Those six construction workers, of course, who were on the bridge, unfortunately lost their lives, and they're still looking for four of them. They found two bodies so far. So, and then the other part is now you have these people who, of course, who have always had this fear of going over bridges. That fear has been heightened, no doubt, by the hit on the Francis Scott Key Bridge. Did you know that the Chesapeake Bay Bridge, which is one of the longest bridges in North America, it may be the longest, 4.5 miles long, they have a program, and I imagine there might be some other bridges across North America that do this as well, that if you give them 24 hours advance notice, they will have somebody waiting for you on one side of the bridge to drive you over. So if you're one of those panic drivers, this person, man or woman, will get into your car, you get into the passenger seat, they'll drive you over the other side of the bridge, pull over, and they'll wait for the next car to come across. So that tells you how panicked people are about crossing bridges, especially in the case of the Chesapeake Bay Bridge. 523, let's go overseas. Israel needs to allow more humanitarian assistance into Gaza. That's what Maryland Democratic Senator Chris Van Hollen was saying on the news shows over the weekend.
So it's my view that as part of a partnership, we should get those assurances from the Netanyahu government up front rather than just send weapons now and ask questions later.
Yeah, so Van Hollen taking it a step farther. He said the U.S. should not send Israel more bombs until Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu allows more aid to flow into the Gaza Strip.
I want to thank President Biden because he has followed through on his commitment. The Army Corps of Engineers will cover all the costs of clearing the channel.
Now, there are a lot of conflicting reports about how much aid is getting in there. The Israelis say plenty of aid is getting in there, and they're not holding it up. Then you have lots of people from other countries around the world saying, no, the aid is not getting in there. But the Israelis say, no, it is flowing in better now. You have Republican senator, meanwhile, saying Israeli forces need to move into southern Gaza to win the war with Hamas, which means going into Rafah, which is where President Biden has warned them not to go.
They know that they have to go into Rafah to destroy Hamas. They have to destroy Hamas. They need American support, but they're going to go into Rafah to get rid of Hamas, whether the U.S. supports them or not.
That's Florida Senator Rick Scott, who was on Fox News Sunday after returning from a trip to Israel. Scott says he met with Prime Minister Netanyahu, as well with families of hostages being held captive by Hamas. The Biden administration has expressed concerns with Israel's plan for Rafah, as millions of people seeking refuge are currently in that city. We'll have to see what happens. The Israelis were sending a delegation to the U.S. to explain their plans in Rafah. Not clear if that delegation is still coming. While we're overseas, one House Republican believes Speaker Mike Johnson will allow a vote on Ukraine, aid to Ukraine soon.
I am confident that he is going to bring a bill to the floor and that we will have a vote. He understands the responsibility that we have.
New York, Long Island Congressman Mike Lawler saying he believes there'll be a vote when Congress returns from the Easter recess, and that they need to get this aid, he believes, to Ukraine as soon as possible. 525, let's go down to Florida. There are cases of leprosy in Florida. Florida has reported 203 cases of the ancient disease leprosy since 2013, 11 of them in South Florida. The concern is that the infectious disease that affects the nerves and the skin has become endemic or regularly occurring, and that we're seeing more cases present day.
It's there. What we try and do is keep the prevalence to the minimum and make sure that people know that exposure to certain types of animals is going to increase their risk.
When was the last time you heard about leprosy? Oh, my God. I mean, you know, maybe some faraway place, but not Florida. FIU infectious disease expert Dr. Eileen Merity says 95% of the population has a natural immunity, so that's a good thing.
The armadillos that came in contact with that area became infected and then spread back to Texas, all over Louisiana, and have already crossed all the way across the southern states into Florida.
Yeah, so that's how they're saying they got to Florida.
You hear all the time, you have to have this close touch contact. That's not totally true. You have to be susceptible and you have to have a high enough infectious dose for your particular type of immune system as to whether you're going to be able to manage it or not.
Yeah, you can't make that stuff up. Two books checked out from a Louisville, Kentucky library nearly a century ago have finally been returned. Mark Perlmutter, this is grandson of Miriam Perlmutter, who checked out the books all those years ago.
The number of books she checked out as an immigrant that could barely speak the language at some point is a testament to what it can do to lift people up.
Famous composers and their works and first Russian book. Those are the two books his grandmother took out almost 100 years ago. No fines will be charged against them. Coming up in the business week ahead, the markets reopened today after being closed Good Friday. Today brings word on construction spending with job openings data and auto sales numbers from the following day. ADP releases its employment report on Wednesday. And later in the day, Fed Chair Jerome Powell set to deliver remarks. Weekly jobless claims are out on Thursday, and the week wraps up on Friday, highlighted by the monthly jobs report. But you've been following the markets. They have been gangbusters lately. Let's hope it stays that way. Radio 77,
WABC. It's the 77 WABC News Hour.
Talking the news with Noah Layden.
All the news you need to know with Joe Nolan, traffic, Justin Ellick, sports. And now,
talking the news with Noah
on 77 WABC.
Yes, that's me, 533. Good morning. It is Monday, April 1st. Your forecast from the Ramsey Mazda Weather Center. Showers this morning. Clouds this afternoon, high 54. Tonight and overnight, cloudy, pop-up showers, low 47. And then Tuesday, rain, high 49. If you're walking out the door with us right now, so happy you are. 44, cloudy in Nanuet up in Rockland County. It is 48 and cloudy in Cranford down in New Jersey. And it is 49 and cloudy here in Midtown. A whole lot to get to as we work our way up 6 o'clock hour. Sid and friends in the morning. We'll start here in the city, where Mayor Adams over the weekend giving the green light to a pilot program that could allow self-driving vehicles here in the city. Can you imagine? I mean, it's bad enough with regular folk, but self-driving vehicles, I don't know, that frightens me. Similar programs are being tested in cities like San Francisco. But, of course, safety concerns remain top of mind as traffic deaths are already on the rise in some parts of the five boroughs. The mere idea of a car driving without a driver on the streets of Manhattan is enough to panic a lot of New Yorkers.
I don't think that's possible. I just think that the level of traffic that's here, it just wouldn't be feasible to have people not behind the wheel.
So the upcoming test phase, which is going to happen with these robotic cars, they would not exactly be driverless. We reached out to the Department of Transportation and the Department of Transportation Commissioner is Adonis Rodriguez. And he says initially when they do these tests, which is not going to happen tomorrow, but they're happening soon, there will be somebody in the car in case something goes wrong to push a brake or move the wheel. So they will be driverless essentially, but there'll be somebody to stop the car if something goes wrong. I don't know. This whole driverless thing just panics me. I know a lot of people are okay with it. Maybe the next generation will be totally fine with it when they grow up with it. But the idea of giving control of my car to a robot, to a machine, to a computer just freaks me out. So does Alexa Sledge. She's of the group Transportation Alternatives. She says the city efforts would serve people better if they directed the tech priorities towards public transportation and not these cars.
New Yorkers do not need to be lab rats for any type of technology. We don't have to bring driverless cars to New York City. If we want to bring in autonomous vehicles, let's expand things like the AirTrain. That's an autonomous vehicle. That's also public transportation.
And then think about all those taxi drivers who have the medallions, all the Uber drivers who make a full-time living driving across the city. You can imagine they are very opposed to the idea of driverless cars, of self-driving cars. They say you know, bring on the experiment, but we don't want these cars here in the city.
Within New York City, we have so many pedestrians, scooters, bikes already. To add these vehicles to the road is just going to cause a nightmare.
It is. It sounds like a disaster in waiting, but this is what we're being told by the Department of Transportation, Idonis Rodriguez, that they are going to test the autonomous vehicles here in New York. The companies that want to do it will first have to reach out for what's called a demo permit, then a testing permit. So there's a two-part scenario. And then these participating companies must also report all of their data, including incidents where test drivers had to take command of the cars. My guess is that's going to happen more often than they think, but maybe I'm just a nervous Nelly. WABC News Time 5:38. It was a really violent weekend here in the city. Six shootings, two people killed across the five boroughs on Friday, a shooting outside a smoke shop on the Lower East Side. Cops do have somebody in custody. There was a deadly shooting South Jamaica, Queens. Gunman shot and killed a 61-year-old woman inside an apartment. There's a person of interest in custody there. Then on Saturday, two men in their 20s were shot in Fordham Heights up in the Bronx. A 25-year-old shot in the chest. He passed away. Doctors expect a 23-year-old who was shot in the stomach there to survive. And then, if that's not outrageous enough, a 2-year-old was shot in the hip. This was Saturday afternoon about 2 p.m. He and his mother were coming out of the TD Bank in Fordham. He was turning 3 yesterday, so he was coming out with his mother out of the TD Bank. Shots rang out in front of this bank, and there were a fair amount of eyewitnesses.
Everybody was running and standing still.
If a mother ain't getting killed, they're killing the kids, women getting killed, and nobody doing nothing.
Yeah, people, of course, outraged, as they should be. The mother ran across the block with her son, tried to get help. Once this bullet pierced her son in the backside, a glass window at the bank shattered. A city council member raced to the scene to find out what was going on.
It's not okay. It should not be happening. And we have to do everything that we can as leaders to support rooting out violence in our communities.
Yes, so the NYPD doesn't know who's behind this. They don't know who they were aiming for. Clearly, it was not the 2-year-old who was a bystander, who thankfully is expected to make a full recovery. He's at Jacoby Medical Center this morning. The shooter fled on foot towards Creston Avenue on 190th Street. Neighbors say, boy, just nobody is safe anymore. 2-year-old taking a bullet.
Everyday thing, man. It's every day. The bail reform, they use it. Well, people don't do nothing. Don't blah, blah, blah. If you do a felony and you get caught back, I'm 55. I'm old school, Bill. If you get caught with a gun, you automatically going up north.
He's right.
Nowadays, you get caught with a gun, it's a free play.
Yeah, well, this is the same thing we talked about in the case of Officer Diller. Now, fast forward to this 2-year-old. We don't know, but we can only assume this is somebody who's probably committed a crime before. And again, here we are talking about the reforms to bail reform, and maybe Governor Hochul will try to do something during the legislature up in Albany to get that fixed. Subway riders, Cypress Hills train station, high alert. NYPD say a female passenger stalked aboard a J train over the weekend. This 48-year-old woman got off at the Jamaica Parsons stop where this man began to follow her. He chased her inside an apartment building where she was somehow able to fight him off, and she's okay. But subway riders say, boy, they see this happen all too often.
I don't want to travel by myself at all, or either with my kids.
I find it disturbing for a guy to just randomly want to attack a woman, because why is anyone attacking anyone?
Yeah, so police actively looking to find the man responsible for this incident aboard the J train. They have pretty clear pictures of him, but they have not caught up with him yet. Down to New Jersey, Sayreville community over the weekend gathering to grieve this 9-year-old boy who was found dead in a burning car. People came out to the vigil at Veterans Field behind Borough Hall in support of the family. This event, organized just 2 days after this crime, rocked this community. They say the father has something to do with this 9-year-old's death, who was found in a burning car. this boy's classmates, as they went to Woodrow Wilson Elementary in Sayreville, just devastated. So are the parents.
You know, we needed to have something that the kids can come to and try to understand, because they're not going to be able to understand, but to understand.
So this nine-year-old was known as a star athlete on the basketball and baseball football team on Veterans Field in Sayreville, and so people really knew who this kid was. So
he just won the third and fourth grade championship. He was an all-star. He told me after the game he could beat me in basketball, and, you know, he couldn't wait to play again. He's just an outstanding kid, great student, just really what, a kid should be. And he's going to be greatly missed.
Now, you try to make sense of this all, and of course, there's no sense to it. Why and how a father could kill his own 9-year-old boy. The boy's father charged with first-degree murder, second-degree aggravated arson, endangerment of a child in connection to the case. Again, this 9-year-old found in a burning car. This was on Thursday.
This community is very close-knit. A tragedy like this happens. Everybody is grieving. Everybody's hurting. Then we're going to get through this together.
Yeah. 5:43, let's bring it back here into the city. New York City announcing an effort to bring jobs and training to parts of the city with high unemployment. Mayor Adams says the city needs to reduce barriers to economic opportunities in places like Brownsville, Brooklyn, where part of this plan would take place.
We must succeed together. We cannot have full employment in parts of this city and have double digits or high employment in black and brown communities because of the lack of access to employment.
Yeah, so the city's going to hold these monthly hiring halls to bring job opportunities, career services to disadvantaged community in every borough. He had also announced the launching of a new job site where you can also look for new gigs.
We got to meet and talk with people. We got to interact and find out what's the hurdle, what's the barrier, why aren't you employed? We have thousands of jobs that are open in city government.
Yeah, so many people during the pandemic left those city jobs. A lot of people, when the pandemic was over, said they wanted to continue to work remotely, and the city was not going to let many of these workers continue to work remotely. And so there's a ton of city government jobs that are open and available. Some of them pay pretty well and have pretty good benefits for that matter.
There are so many jobs that are open, but it's just too darn difficult to make that connection. And we have to make that connection more easier so people can feel welcomed and invited to come and be employed.
Yeah, but if you're one of those people looking for a gig, go to the city nyc.gov. I can't even tell you how many gigs are open. And some of them, like I say, they pay pretty well. You have to be in person. That's part of the gig. And that's what's turned off so many of these workers who did not come back after the pandemic was over. Said no, they wanted to continue to work remote, and they found jobs that would let them do so. All right, 5:45, let's head over to the 77 WABC Sports Desk where we find Justin Ella.
Thank you, Noam Layden. Start with the completion of opening weekend on the diamond for Major League Baseball out in Houston. Juan Soto, he has risen, Noam. Wow, on an Easter Sunday. Three hits capped by an RBI single with two outs in the ninth inning that lifted the Yankees to a 4-3 win. That completed an opening four-game sweep of the arch-rival Houston Astros. Soto hit 529, 9 for 17, with four RBI in his first game with the Yankees after his trade from San Diego.
Can we say the trade is good now? Because everybody got mad at me saying that this is incredible.
What? People got mad at you?
Yes,
saying it was a good
Friday,
trade?
Somebody was yelling at me saying it was too soon, too early.
Yeah, but nobody was ever saying it was a bad trade.
No, but I was saying this is the guy. This is the dude.
Well, I mean, listen, you know, it's a long season, though. We don't want to get ahead of ourselves. We're four games in.
Yeah. But he's had a pretty great four games.
Well, this is about as good as it can get. You're 4-0. You haven't lost. He's, you know, hitting really well, driving in clutch runs. I mean, this is what you'd expect.
Making plays at the plate.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Now, it does overshadow some of the struggles of some of the other guys on the team that we'd like to see get going, like Aaron Judge, like Alex Verdugo, but I'm not...
Still early.
That's not a gripe today. Yeah. I'm not going to have that gripe. We're 4-0. We're all right. So, they'll try and take that momentum, though, Noma, with them to Arizona next, where they'll get the defending NL champ Diamondbacks for a three-game set starting tonight. First pitch scheduled for 9:40 p.m. The youngster Luis Gil gets the nod on the bump for the Yanks. Out in Queens, the Mets are singing a completely different tune to start their season. Still winless after yesterday's 4-1 loss to the Milwaukee Brewers. It is the first 0-3 start for the Mets since 2014. They'll try and get off the schneid when they open a fresh three-game set tonight at home against the Detroit Tigers. First pitch there set for 7:10 p.m. with lefty Sean Manaea geared up to make his first start in orange and blue. Over to the collegiate hardwood, the Final Four is officially set after this weekend's electric Elite Eight action in the NCAA men's basketball tournament. On Saturday, 1-seed UConn advanced past 3-seed Illinois before 4-seed Alabama eliminated 6-seed Clemson. Yesterday, 1-seed Purdue took down 2-seed Tennessee before 11-seed Cinderella. NC State upset 4-seed Duke to punch their ticket to the program's first Final Four since its 1983 national title. On the hardwood in the NBA, at the Garden, the Knicks fell in a last-second heartbreak, 113-112 to the OKC Thunder, following OKC's snatch of the lead with 2.6 seconds remaining. In Brooklyn, the Nets lost 116-104 to the visiting L.A. Lakers thanks to a 40-point night out of L.A.'s LeBron James. Looking ahead to local action in the NHL tonight, the Rangers will welcome in the Pittsburgh Penguins for a 7 p.m. puck drop while the Islanders simultaneously pay the Flyers a visit in Philadelphia. That's your Sports Gnome, and I'm Justin Ellick on 77 WABC.
Let's get you up on some of the big stories of the morning. Of course, yesterday, Easter, beautiful day for services, people out with their Easter bonnets along Fifth Avenue, thousands packing Fifth Avenue. Cardinal Dolan presiding over services at St. Patrick's Cathedral in Midtown. At one point, some Palestinian protesters interrupted the services on Saturday. Sunday, well, they did not have that happen again. What we heard from churches across the tri-state was that the pews were packed in a way that they haven't been over the last couple years. St. Agnes Cathedral, Rockville Center, the people had to stand outside the church because there wasn't enough room.
Easter is a time of reflection and remembering what Easter really is. It's about Jesus rising.
We're new to the area. They were baptized here at 2 months. And, you know, we try to bring them as often as we can. And so it's really exciting to be here on the holiest day.
Yes, people trying to figure out why this year was so big over the last couple of years. Maybe it's just because it's been a tough time in the world with the war overseas, the violence here in New York City, the shooting of NYPD cop Jonathan Diller.
It can be so hard at times, but today's a day of hope. They want this. They want to be here. They want the message of hope.
Man, and then, of course, outside St. Patrick's Cathedral, Fifth Avenue, as it is every year, shut down from East 49th to East 57th Street. Boy, it was one of the bigger celebrations they've had in years. Just thousands of people putting on their Sunday best, a lot of them in these crazy Easter bonnets and dressed in costumes.
I love the creativity. I love New York City. This is what we live for.
Yep.
It's a yearly tradition. We got to come correct.
Yeah, this one woman... Well, I should say girl. She had a huge pizza slice on top of her bonnet. Her father had a napkin holder, sort of looking like a pizza parlor between the two of them.
There are so many people from every nation. It's beautiful.
After last year, we left the parade. We already were starting thinking of our next idea. So it took about, I have to say, 5 to 6 months to actually get an idea on the table.
Yeah, people go crazy. It's sort of like Halloween in the same way. They prepare their costumes for months ahead of time. While that was taking place, this fire broke out during Easter Mass at a church in Bushwick, Brooklyn, at Our Lady of Rosary of the Pompeii, is an old church, apparently with old electrical wiring and a lot of wood, and they think that's what started this fire. It was in the rectory and the Sunday school. So they're celebrating Easter Mass. This is about 1 o'clock, 200 worshipers inside, and someone runs in to say that the building is on fire. Firefighters, they're able to get everybody out. Firefighters race in. At one point during this blaze, there was a thought that there was a firefighter lost amid the building, but they sent out this May Day call, and the firefighter that they were looking for heard the May Day call on his radio and thought it was for somebody else, but it was for him, and he was actually okay, thank God.
He didn't realize that the May Day was for him, so he bounced up off the floor, came in, and wanted to run back up the stairs to address the May Day issue, but not realizing that the May Day was himself. He was unhurt, thank God, and he was able to continue to fight the fire.
So this was a pretty stubborn, smoky fire. Parishioners stood outside as firefighters battled it. Of course, a lot of them feeling heartbroken to see, especially Easter, you know, that this church, or at least part of it, was destroyed.
When a church is around for a long time, the history that develops among people individually. So this is hurting everybody that it worships here.
Yeah, so the good part of this is that there were some injuries, all of them minor. A couple people were taken to the hospital. They are back home. And what likely saved the chapel of this church in Bushwick is the person who discovered the fire closed all the doors that connected the rectory and the Sunday school to the chapel. And firefighters say no doubt that helped.
Keep the door closed because that contains the fire. And thankfully, we were able to save the church part of the structure. Has some water damage, but is undamaged overall. And I think that's God looking down on us today on Easter Sunday and saving at least that part of the building.
Yeah, so the bad news is, as part of this building destroyed, the good news is the injury is all minor. And then we were watching on over the weekend, no doubt probably you were as well, Saturday morning, the funeral for NYPD cop Jonathan Diller. Tens of thousands of police officers showing up, dozens of NYPD cops on foot and driving motorcycles escorting the coffin of Jonathan Diller to St. Rose of Lehman Roman Catholic Church in Massapequa Park, his wife, Stephanie, giving the eulogy.
He wasn't the type to sugarcoat anything, so I won't sugarcoat this. This is devastating.
Yeah, so if you were living under a rock over the last 7 days, Jonathan Diller shot and killed while on a traffic stop in Far Rockaway, Queens, last Monday night, shot and killed by a guy who definitely should not have been out from behind bars. Mayor Adams spoke during this service.
And I hear over and over in my ears, I've been shot, I've been shot, I've been shot. And even with the acknowledgement that he was shot, he fought and took the gun out of the hand of the person who would take his life.
Sid was in the church on Saturday morning. No doubt we'll have a lot more to say about that coming up in just a few minutes from now. Lottery officials in New Jersey, they're waiting for this Mega Millions winner to come forward. This is the person who bought a ticket at a ShopRite in Neptune worth $1.3 billion. So it's not clear if this person will come forward because there's rules in New Jersey that say they do not have to tell us who they are.
The law in New Jersey says that winners of the lottery can remain anonymous. So we might not ever. I'll know. Hopefully we'll have that ticket claim. I'll know who won the lottery, but we can't tell the press and the public who won that ticket.
Yes. So as we wait for this person to come forward, likely they won't. If they hire someone smart to handle the money, they'll tell them, don't go forward. The ticket was sold at that ShopRite liquor store. The stores always get money for selling a winning ticket, and that ShopRite took the $30,000 check they got from the lottery and gave it back to charity.
This check will go directly to Fulfill, which is the local food bank that is right up the street from Monmouth and Ocean County. And I'm sure that the food bank is really going to appreciate this donation.
Yeah. And then finally, how old do you really want to live? Brooklyn woman. I mean, I should say this because she's still alive. But I always think, like, you know, at some point, there's nobody else, like even a contemporary, that's around to hang out with. You're just so old. That's it. I should honor this person because she made it to her 101st birthday, Josephine Nigro, celebrating her 101st birthday out in Brooklyn. And she's totally with it. Here she is.
More love and less crime. And enjoy your families. They are the jewels of your life. Love your family. Love your neighbors. Do all the good you can while you can. Because after it's gone, then it's too late. Make other people happy. And the saying, do unto others as you would have others do unto you.
Yeah, so great advice. Celebrating her birthday in Borough Park. Happy birthday to Josephine Nigro.